Pull through, if that's okay. Item one, apologies.
Chair, apologies from Councillor Thompson and Councillor Young.
Item two, order of business.
Is as printed in the agenda, Chair.
Are there any declarations of interest? That takes us to item four, minutes of the meeting of 3rd of March 2015. Are these accepted? Okay. That takes on to item five, which is the Planning Performance Framework Annual Report 2013-14, report by Head of Communities and Economy.
Thank you, Chairman. This is a report to update the committee on the progress of work undertaken on the Planning Performance Framework, the PPF, for Midlothian. Specifically, it provides feedback from the Scottish Government on the Council's submitted PPF for 2013-14. The Council's PPF for 2013-14 was submitted to the Scottish Government on the 26th of September 2014. It provides a comprehensive review of progress during that year and highlights steady improvements in a number of areas, most notably increased performance on the time taken to determine planning applications, as well as the continued good progress in the preparation of the Midlothian Local Development Plan. Formal written feedback was received in December 2014 and a copy is attached to this report. In the feedback report on the 15 performance measures, 5 were rated as green, giving no cause for concern, 8 were rated as amber, where areas of improvement are identified, and 2 areas were rated as red, where some specific attention is required. The 2 red items relate to the progress of the Midlothian Local Development Plan, which, as the committee will be aware, is scheduled for publication in May of this year for a 6-week consultation process. It is recommended that the committee notes the feedback from Scottish Government on the Council's submitted plan performance framework for 2013-14.
Are there any comments?
Just one comment, Chairman. I mean, you know, the report that shows the identifies the 2 red areas were not in the control of Midlothian Council. The strategic development plan, which by the way is the property of the civil servants, wasn't approved, so therefore everything was put in abeyance and we were actually heading on quite a nice timescale. And I mean, Ian has already reported back to Council that things have you know, had to be delayed because until the strategic development plan and the supplementary guidance were actually published and agreed, then we did not know if there was going to be any amendments to the local plan. So, you know, it's just, you know, why not just say you're doing a good job and get, you know, but you're going the right direction. To identify something that wasn't our fault, I just think it's a bit childish.
Agree. That takes on then to item number 6, which is the planning performance report for 2014-15. And Peter again.
Thank you, Chairman. This is a report to update the committee on planning application, planning appeals and reviews, enforcement and planning customer service performance against key outcome indicators for the period 2014-15. The report identifies that 84% of planning applications were determined within time targets. This is above the 80% target set by the Scottish Government and continues the significant improvement made in this regard over recent years. The performance over the last 6 years is referenced in paragraph 3.3 of the report for comparison. The introduction of the new planning performance framework in 2012 means that performance with regard to the processing of planning applications is also measured by the average time to deal with major and local applications. Table B on page 22 in the report outlines the figures collated up to and including 2013-14. The data for 2014-15 has not yet been collated and published by the Scottish Government. The report also shows that the number of applications received has increased compared to previous years. The number of legacy cases in the system have decreased. The number of enforcement cases have increased. More potential applicants are using the pre-application service, and the use of the online planning system is increasing. The recommendation is for the committee to note the contents of the report and to agree to receive further performance reports.
Another good report. Move on then to item 7. That is major applications and applications currently being assessed, other developments at pre-application consultation stage, and another report by Peter.
Thank you, Chairman. This is just the regular update with regard to major applications. If there's any questions or comments, I'll take them. Otherwise, the report's for noting.
So noted. Takes us on to item 8, appeals and local review body decisions, report by Peter.
Again, Chairman, just another report for noting, unless there's any questions or comments. It's just to update the members on two decisions made by the local review body at its meeting in March.
Noted. Item 9, pre-application consultation.
Thank you, Chairman. This is a report regarding a pre-application consultation regarding the proposed infilling and restoration of Middleton Lower Quarry. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposals at this very early stage of the planning process, in line with guidance reported to committee in May and October 2014. The applicants are currently engaged in a public consultation exercise, which concludes on the 19th of May 2015. A public drop-in session was held at North Middleton Village Hall on the 23rd of March. It is anticipated that a detailed planning application will be submitted shortly after the conclusion of the consultation process. The report outlines a provisional planning consideration with regard to the adopted local plan. However, it is worth noting that this consideration is based on an indicative information available at present. A detailed assessment of any proposal will be made once a planning application is forthcoming. It is recommended that the committee notes the provisional planning position set out in the report, that any comments that members wish to make will form part of the minute, and that the expression of a provisional view does not fetter the committee in its consideration of any subsequent formal planning application.
Councillor Devink.
Yes, I have a number of points that I would like to raise on this. First of all, I want to state that I'm really very keen to see this enormous car filled in, but it needs to be done properly. And while we are now discussing here the second part of the infill, the very first part is one that gives me great concern, because I think that has been done in a very inappropriate way, and I hope that the planners will investigate how that has been done, because I think there has been a great disregard of an awful lot of issues, and I have discussed those with Ian Johnson, mainly that the ground that is filled in is well above the height of the rest of the countryside. Also, I hope that the right topsoil will be applied. You have subsoil and topsoil. I think I yesterday went to see it with you, Chairman, and we came back really very concerned about what is happening there. And when the first infill is not done properly, we want to be absolutely convinced that the second infill will be done according to what we all want to see, and that is to have it returned to agricultural use. They're talking here about reinstatement to a recreational use, but I feel that that is something that really needs to be reviewed quite carefully before we agree to that, because in the end of the day, it's agricultural use, and recreational use is a lot cheaper for the developer to do than bringing it back to agricultural use. Also, I am very concerned about the movements of vehicles on a road that is totally inadequate, and I feel the planners need to look at the possibility of widening the road. Now, not that we will pay for it, but the developer will pay for that, no doubt, because the movement of 66 vehicles is one thing, but there's also two other projects there. One is talking about 120 lorries a day in total from the two different other projects and the new one. So this is really an enormous pressure on a tiny road that is far too small. I'd be also interested to hear the local councillors, because I know that one local councillor has had discussions with one of the farmers whose livelihood will be under enormous pressure if that is not going to be solved.
Yeah, just in case Councillor Devine's referring to me, I did speak to, I'm not sure he's still a farmer, but one of the people in that area spoke to me about it. I didn't express any opinion about it and fed some information back to the planning department. This obviously a pre-application hearing, and it, you know, we need to be careful in what we're saying, but certainly this is a hole in the ground that needs to be filled in one way or another. What I will be interested in seeing at the full planning meeting when the application comes forward is what the mitigating measures are going to be in terms of the impact that that level of vehicles running is going to have on the local environment, the local community. I know that there have been concerns raised on that on these issues over a long period of time. So it will be, I'll be interested to see what the conditions we are going to apply to that and to the method of infill and the monitoring that goes on as to what goes in, what's appropriate to go in to the quarry. So all that I look forward to seeing on the application when it comes forward. I think it's important that that kind of information is relayed back to the applicant so that we, you know, in anticipation of what we would expect to see as councillors coming forward to us.
I've had people at my surgery in Middleton on this issue, and I have received photographs, mainly highways, kind of photographs that are forwarded onto the planning official, but I've no way ever responded to any opinion on it at this early stage. But it'd be interesting to know on 2.3, on the public meeting that took place in the Middleton Hall, does this actually form part of a report back? Was there any planning officers there, or was it appropriate for any planning officers to be there? I know myself wasn't there, and neither was Councillor Muirhead, but I just wondered if there was any feedback from that going to be taking part in the final decision making, because I've heard secondhand some of the things that was raised at that evening and the presentations that was done on the evening, but I just wondered to know if I would get an official minute or whatever, or extract of the outcomes of that consultation meeting, which I believe was quite well attended.
Chairman, on that point, the public events or the drop-in sessions that take place as part of the pre-application consultation are recorded by the applicant, and it is on the applicant's responsibility to make notes and record that event. They then have to submit that note with their planning application. So when they submit the planning application, with that comes a report which picks up and tries to address the sort of feedback that they receive. Obviously, other interested parties can see that when the application is submitted, so they could potentially challenge or reinforce that that's maybe a fair or correct record. So it is available to be scrutinised. So there will be a report on that drop-in session, submit with a planning application. The application cannot be made valid unless that reports with it.
Peter?
I actually attended that meeting in a personal capacity because I'm a member of the Morfoot community. And I'd never attended a community council meeting where so many people turned up. There were over 100 people there, about 115, 116 people that turned up, and they were all up in arms. I mean, the applicant gave a very competent report. He explained to the people there what was going to happen. The problem is that when he said there were only going to be 66 movements of lorries, in the past, those movements have been vastly greater than the 66 that they are predicting. So not many people were willing to believe that. The two farmers, the one that you were talking about, Jim, is called Brian Quigley at Gildy House. He gave a fantastically detailed presentation showing, you know, photographs of the lorries that have been there. There were about 25 of them all, bumper to bumper in one of the photographs. He has got a stick of that that probably the planners ought to look at. He gave me one, but I'll bring it in because it's really quite a good presentation. And the other farmer at Western Middleton was also up in arms because, you know, it really is for them an enormous upheaval. Just their operation, which is already under huge pressure because of CAP changes. And, you know, for them, it's a real, real nightmare. So it would be good if the applicant really engaged with the two farmers, because they are the ones that are most heavily involved. But also the people from Middleton, you know, what one must remember that there are three operations going. There's a sand extraction, which is CMAX, and that comes all the way from Temple Village via a running band, and that comes out there. Then there is Leith, who have got some enormous bulk tankers there and an enormous industrial structure. And then, of course, there's Neil Williams Holdings with the two quarries, the one that they have filled in already, and now the next one. But it needs to be filled in, absolutely, there's no doubt, and people do recognize that.
Thank you, Peter. Peter, can we, if there's no objections, that Peter's comments the first time he spoke, and also Councillor Muirhead's comments on the paper when it comes forward, yeah?
Yeah, they're form part of the minute, Chairman, and the actual issues about the quality of material, the haulage routes, the number of movements, that will form part of the planning assessment of the future application.
Happy with that, Peter, Jim? We move on to item 10 then, application for planning permission, consider at previous meeting, report by Peter.
Thank you, Chairman. This is an application for the erection of 290 dwellings on land to the south of Gorton Low and Rose Well. The proposed development consists of 292-storey dwellings comprising a mix of detached and semi-detached houses, of which 40 of the units will be affordable houses. A proposed business park of over 2 hectares, a new roundabout accessing off the Rosewell bypass, the A6094, two vehicular access points off Gorton Lone, pedestrian links to Carnethy Street via the Rosewell steading site once developed and via Lindsay Row, open space providing a kickabout area and play provision, landscaping and suds and car parking provision. The houses are of contemporary design, will comprise a mix of concrete and clay and slate roof tiles and render and brick walling, with some reconstituted stone detailing. The sites allocated in part dates back from before the 2003 local plan. Other parts of the site were allocated in the 2008 local plan. This means there is a presumption in favour of a mixed-use development of residential and business development, which is not outweighed by other material considerations. The development itself is well laid out and provides distinct character areas and interesting spaces in a form which reflects the existing housing in Rosewell. In addition to the consultation process, there has been a comprehensive comment from the Community Council, 21 letters of representation, and a petition containing 24 signatures. The committee deferred consideration of the application at its meeting in March to enable further clarification to be provided with regard to education provision and broadband connections. The covering update report seeks to clarify these points in response to elected members' queries. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to developer contributions and conditions.
Jim.
Before we go into discussion, can I just ask a question? We started to discuss this issue at the last planning meeting, and there are three councillors here who had apologies in for that meeting. Should they be part of this discussion?
This application was continued at the last meeting. What you have before you is the full planning committee report for last time, plus the supplementary for this time. I'm not the monitoring officer. In the absence of the monitoring officer here, who can be called, but my view would be that all members present have the full amount of information in front of them. They will have been able to look at the minutes of the previous meeting as well, which is again repeated here, and therefore would be in a position such that they wouldn't be prejudiced as having not had the opportunity to be involved in the application in terms of the determination procedures.
Yeah, it's up to these councillors. I just thought I would raise the issue because I knew we'd started to discuss it.
Okay, we'll leave it to the three councillors to make their own mind up. Lisa?
Thanks, Jim. I'm really sorry, but I don't quite understand Councillor Muirhead's point. I'm not being deliberately difficult. I really don't understand.
It's a genuine question. I just noticed that because we had started to discuss it, I'm just really asking, is it necessary, you know, to have been in attendance at both? Because that's quite often the case when we're discussing other quasi-judicial issues like at GP. You know, you've got to be present the previous time. I'm just wondering if it applies here. I'm no fussy whether people stay or not, to be honest with you. I just thought I would draw it to your attention.
Bob, you want to speak?
Better. yes, no, I wasn't here the last time, but I did leave a licence review board, which was a continuation of a process which had started. This has been, and we've had the minutes, we've got the full information here, and I don't feel any need to leave this meeting.
Russell?
Well, if we are where we are, then can I ask perhaps Sandra to just maybe explain the paragraphs that have come back, i.e. from education provision, just maybe to explain what it actually means.
It's up to him. I think he just made the decision that he was going to go. That's really up to him.
Thank you. The position in relation to primary capacity. This site in Rosewell, or these site combined sites in Rosewell, will feed into Rosewell Primary School. And as the report states, the school has already had a level of extension. But in the planning for this, we planned to do a further extension as and when the additional housing in Rosewell would come forward. So the plans that were drawn up for Rosewell Primary School included another bank of four classrooms that will be added on to the extension that is already there. So that's the position in relation to the proposed primary provision, and the developer contribution that will be sought will be directed towards paying for the cost of that extension. In relation to secondary provision, the position in relation to Lasswade High School is that it is indeed currently pretty well at its current stated capacity. But there are a number of things in the background which mean that does not necessarily mean, as more pupils would come out of this development, that the school would require to be extended. The school has been designed so that it is possible to be extended, but it's not our intention to do so. Within the pupils that are currently attending Lasswade High School, there are quite a number that are coming from out with Lasswade's catchment area. We have it's a popular school, and there are a number of placing requests into it, particularly from the Dalkeith and New Battle areas. That's the position in relation to the actual pupil role. And in the paper that went to Council in December, one of the strategies looking at the overall pressure on secondary pupils across all of Midlothian was that we would, at the appropriate time, look at a school for the A7, a secondary school for the A701 corridor located around the Bilston Lonehead area, which would serve Bilston Lonehead and Roslyn, and that school would thereby relieve quite a lot of the pressure on Lasswade. And in conclusion, that's the essence of what's been summarised in this report.
Russell, do you want to say something?
No.
Lisa?
Thank you. Can I come back to the primary provision, please? And I'm really seeking some assurance that in addition to the extension of more classroom space, that the other more general spaces are sufficient in capacity or can be made sufficient in capacity to care for the needs of the children who will then be attending, because clearly there's a knock-on impact on things beyond the classroom they would occupy.
Yes, and in the second phase, which is looking at a redesign of the internal space of the old part of Rosewell Primary School, that would be key to having the ancillary provisions out to supplement the classroom spaces.
Bob? Thank you, Chair. Yes, referring to Rosewell Primary, I've been at the opening of the extension, and it's unusual in that this is an old school which was extended very sympathetically, and the new extension is absolutely really first class and very popular. So I'll be looking forward to seeing how this, as you say, the adaptation of the old part of the school, which was retained, and the new, I'll be interested to see how this goes, and I hope it goes, you know, in the same sympathetic fashion that has happened with the other extension. I'm also very relieved to hear that I know this is a matter, the idea of the extension of Lasswade High so soon after its building, it's really, you know, quite appalling to think of, and I'm glad to hear that there will be, for I do know, yes, there's a lot of extra catchment pupils coming into Lasswade High, so the accommodation for the Rosewell one, so then obviously Rosewell naturally fits into the Lasswade catchment area. Thank you.
Derek?
Yeah, firstly, it's a pity we couldn't have had such a succinct answer at the last meeting to the fact that we didn't need to extend Lasswade High School. It would have been good not to have that here running. And even in the report that's here and in my discussion with education staff, it's quite clear that even if we just went ahead with everything that's planned, it would be a good 8 to 10 years and before we'd even need to consider an extension. And even at that, that's only if the pupils that we think will come forward for for these new houses would be the same numbers. However, Sandra makes the point that there are numerous pupils, quite a big chunk of people, fit out with the catchment area, just in fact restricting entry to Lasswade High School, the catchment area pupils would resolve that problem for us. So I think we're all comforted to hear that. There's also the added effect where that you, Sandra, I think you talked about the 701 solution with building a school between Roslyn and Bolson. I take it that you're then considering closing one of the Pennycook schools and amalgamating they two to be able to free up that capacity. So once that consultation is over, it should give us a better view where we might never actually need to extend Lasswade High School at any given time at all, because quite a big loop of the catchment area as pupils coming for Lone Heed. And I would think if they were getting a school built on their doorstep, they would probably choose to go to a brand new school built on their doorstep rather than transportation to Lasswade High. And I would imagine the catchment areas and would go. So I think on the schooling side, I'm quite happy with the answers being given. One of the other questions raised was the broadband, and the broadband provision that was going to be there. I'm not as happy with the answer that we seem to have been given in 4.1, where we're talking about there that the applicant has advised that's anticipated that fibre optic will have rolled out in that area. Anticipating anything in this at all, I think, has been some of the problems. I think we should actually be making it part of the conditions that this has to be available in some form and manner and means, because to be quite frank here, we're sitting just now with large areas of houses that have just been built in Midlothian and they didn't have access to this. Now, you'd have just thought that the generated things that BT Openreach would have indeed planned for this, but it's quite clear that they haven't, and they didn't seem to have it in the scope. And when myself and Ian met with them, it seemed clear that they had missed this game altogether. And I'm not sure whether this assurance for the developer that broadband should be available there. I think we can see the major problem that no having the super fast broadband is given to a lot of people who've moved out here, a lot of small businesses that work from home who need access to this, that have moved out to an area that are finding and having to consider moving away to a different part of hopefully Midlothian. But for business-wise, they're having to relocate because Superfast came along. And if we want to make Midlothian an attractive place to come here and attract entrepreneurs, and that, we've got to make sure that these basic services, because Superfast broadband is becoming just as important to people as your other services, such as electric, gas, waters, etc. It's a daily need. And even if you've got the kids in the house and that for homework purposes and stuff like that, you're looking to have this service. So I'm not sure whether or not other members are happy with it. Well, we think, or the developers have told us that it's anticipated that the fibre optic service will be available. I think we should be looking for something more concrete.
Chairman, if I can just come back on that, if I can, please. It's not just the developers, it's sort of Digital Scotland, which is the national sort of rollout programme as well, which they've got a website which shows the programme of rollout. So it's identified to come to Rosewell in 2015-16, so that's not just what the builder is anticipating, that's what the national programme is. So that is on schedule to do that. In terms of that's a sort of what's called the super fast broadband. In terms of the actual house builder themselves, they provide a connection from the individual houses that get built to the area transmitter, which is the green box, which we see via a sort of copper connection to the transmitter. However, the conduit from the house to the box is of a size which can take fibre optic cable. So effectively, individual owners or occupiers buying or moving into houses can upgrade from the standard speed connection to the superfast broadband by substituting the copper cable with the fibre optics, and that can be done without physically altering the house or digging up the road. But like I say, that is dependent on the national rollout programme, which is looking to get to Rosewell in 2015-16. So that's the position.
Derek?
Yeah, it's maybe to say that Bonnerig, Peter, was measured in to have super fast broadband over the last 2 or 3 years. The bits that they've no delivered it in are the new house build areas, and that's the problem. Just because it's shown on the screen as an area is going to be serviced by super fast broadband, I'm just hoping, and I say Ian's probably more knowledgeable on this subject than me, that when these new houses come along, that they can tap into this, and we didn't find that all the houses surrounding them can tap into it or have already tapped into it, and there's no capacity for the new houses to tap into it.
Ian.
Thank you, Chair. We've just spent the last 10 minutes talking about fibre to the cabinet. The original question related to fibre to the premises. Fibre to the cabinet, there's not that much we or the builders can do apart from perhaps persuade Openreach to connect from the cabinet to the house. Openreach has said to me that for the same price, they will feed fibre into the premises. You're talking about 300 megabits per second, 10 times what you'll get for the cabinet, provided it's over 25 houses. Now, they've said they've spoken to developers about this, but the developers don't seem to be interested. What I'm saying is that in a situation, I'm pretty sure, certainly from what we hear as regards fibres to the cabinet schedule is concerned, that houses being built in that number in Rosewell would be suitable for fibre to the premises. We should therefore be saying to the developers that you have to, as a planning condition, install fibre to the premises, because there's no technical or logistical reason why you cannot do that. All these, as far as it goes, 4.1 and 4.2 are sound, because we're only talking about fibre to the cabinet. But I'm saying that the developers must be forced down the way of fibre to the premises if it can be done.
Make that condition, Peter?
Chairman, in my experience, I would suggest that's not a material consideration which could be conditioned. It's like looking at other parts of an internal fit-out of a house, whether it's a particular bathroom suite or a particular other energy supplier, which, in terms of the planning process, you're looking to put conditions which control the overall use of land or the external building or form of a building, but the internal fit-out. My advice is that you can't condition that. I'll quite happily go away and double check and speak to Willie Ventures and all the rest of it, but my sitting here, I would suggest that's not a material consideration which you could pursue as a planning condition. I'm more than happy, like I say, to go away and speak to legal colleagues, and if it's possible to do it, but I'll maybe need to come back to you, Chair, if it's not possible, because I don't think it is.
Lisa?
Thank you. I have questions on items 3 and 5 on page 43 of the agenda papers. The reference to the protection of trees...
Sorry, Lisa, this is not about the broadband. Could we just finish that
off? I thought you had. Apologies.
I think what's meant here, Peter, is that when it goes to the green box, they should, every house they build, they should put a cable through the wall. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Chairman, I understand the common sense of that and would agree with the common sense of it. It's just the mechanism to deliver it, and I'm just not sure the planning system is the mechanism to deliver a fibre optic connection rather than a copper one. But like I say, I'm happy to go and double check that.
I'm sorry, you can't speak at this stage, I'm sorry. Just want to speak at broadband.
The feeling I got our committee when we were talking about that in previous applications and this one the last time about the policy was that's exactly what we're looking for. And you know, as Ian says, it doesn't cost any more. They're prepared to do it. There must have come a point at which, for all the services, there's come a point where people have taken decisions. You have to have electric in these houses. You have to have water. This is as fundamental as electricity and water. And why should we not be the authority that bucks the trend here or initiates this in the first instance and insist that any new houses that are built here are built with fibre from the green box to the house? And we deal with the things that we've got less control over separately, and that's whether BT actually put the high speed in to that point or no. I think that's something that we should be leading the way on.
Chairman, if I can just come back just to Clafford. Just as I said earlier, the actual conduit is designed, it could actually accommodate it in terms of the physical build of the house. So the infrastructure in terms of the conduit is wide enough. You don't need to change that bit. It's simply the cable bit.
Chairman, that's the very point, isn't it? You're going to copper it all. If we just go down what happens at the moment, you copper 290 houses, you copper a business park, and then you say to each and every owner, stroke tenant, stroke resident, you say to them, by the way, if you want super fast broadband, you'll then have to get it. The facility's there within the conduit to do that. But why have a copper in the first place when fibre would be just as easy? And as Ian's alluded to, the cost factor isn't a consideration given that if you're going to, I mean, you know, you just 290 houses times, I'm sure you could get a deal. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but I if BT themselves are saying it doesn't cost any more to put fibre in rather than copper, well, why as a committee are we getting excited about that? Just tell them that that's what they have to do.
Chair, I understand that the committee's views on this very much so. As it stands, I think that you've heard from Peter Arnsdorf that there are issues as to whether such a condition could be acceptable in legal terms or not. Even if it were to be the case that a condition is put on, it may well be something which would then be simply challenged at appeal. And on the current understanding, it may well be something that could be successfully challenged. What I would suggest is that, and I understand the applicants are in the room, what I would suggest is that if you are otherwise minded as a committee to approve this application, that there be further discussion with the applicants in relation to, having heard the strength of concern here in the chamber, that we discuss with the applicants the most favourable way in which they can seek to meet that level of requirement, that level of service, which would be appropriate for these for the new residents.
Thank you. Yes, I'm quite keen that I'm pleased to see the applicants in the room because, you know, what's not to like? You're not going to pay that much more for it as a developer, if anything, and it'd be much easier to sell your house. The number of people who have come to me who said they think they're moving away from Hopefield because it's another 2 years before they get anything better than about 2 megabits per second, and it, you know, these are people who are running businesses from the houses and cannot do so. So it's in the applicant's interest. So I think that hopefully we're pushing an open door on this. But I think we really need to look, as a committee, as a council, towards the future to see if we can introduce this as a policy.
Chairman, can I just intervene? The house builder is obviously here listening and just whispered in my ear that he'll do it. He'll put the cables in. So if that helps, he'll do it.
Lisa.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I jumped the gun previously. My concern on items 3 and 5 on page 43, notwithstanding the comments in the report, we have in the past had difficulty with other developments of very similar items in the report where there have been recommendations included that appropriate protection would be given to trees, but notwithstanding, work has been commenced before appropriate protection has been put in place, and once the tree is damaged irreparably, it is damaged irreparably. So I would like particular emphasis to be put on, please, proper concern be given to making sure that no work, even preparatory work, takes place until appropriate protection of trees has been put in place. My concern on item 5, that I would like some assurance on, and I've raised this before in committee, is that this percentage for art is so often an afterthought. It's a token gesture to comply with the legislation, rather than something which is properly engaged with the local community in which the new developments to engage and have proper participation with them so that it becomes something that is relevant to that local community, rather than something that the developer thinks would be a nice pastiche on the front of the development. Thank you.
Take that on board, Peter.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like some clarification on the impact on the cycle route which currently runs behind the house on Pentland Crescent, and from my recollection crosses Gorton Road and then runs for a short space away from the main road, but then turns to the right and crosses at the dotted line the path that meets on the other side of the road. I just need an assurance that cyclists are not going to see the quality of the route degraded in any way in terms of safety.
I can give that reassurance. We're aware in terms of assessing the application, obviously looking at the roundabout and all the other highway infrastructure to make sure that route is goes in, and hopefully it'll actually be enhanced in terms of the quality of the surface. So I can give you that reassurance.
If everyone's happy.
Just one thing on the recommendations, just on A, just to say, I did move it at the last meeting, rather than the community stroke leisure facilities, I want it to be community hub, because that's the Rosewell Steering, which is, you know, the Rosewell Community Development Trust. They're pioneering that at the moment, and they've been very successful in getting Crown Estates to gift them the site at nil cost, which is very unusual. But at the end of the day, if the money, if we're not specific, then it could go into other aspects of Rosewell. And I just want to make sure that any monies that are going there are safeguarded and go into the community hub.
Again, Peter, you take that on board, please.
So did you want to speak?
No, I want to just, very embarrassing, but I forgot to say something quite important on the last issue, and if there was a chance to do so, I'd like to do that when this is finished.
I think we're finished now, actually.
Yeah. Just that when I said there were 115 people, in Morfoot there are only 600 houses, so it really shows how many people, really, relatively speaking, were there. And the other thing is, could I encourage members to go on a site visit once the application is in front of us, because you have to see it to really understand the implication of it.
Peter?
Chairman, just to step back, I just confirm for the purpose of the developer, that's the committee's decision, was minded to grant planning permission for the development of Rosewell subject to the conditions and the developer contributions. The developer is committed to putting in the fibre optic.
I would say it's a win-win, yeah? Okay, oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's fantastic that the developer's here and he's given that commitment. It's a pity we hadn't got that commitment to face some other developer. And as Ian quite rightly says, it makes common sense. And I think the fact that this has raised its head, there's a lot of people now aware the deficit of superfast broadband and some of the new sites. Hopefully the developers will take that on. But we're not fully a world where every developer will take everything on. I would still like to see a report back at some stage at your discussions on whether or no we can include this as a condition, and if no, is there anything we need today when adopting the next local plans or anything like that, or any supplementary planning guidance we need to bring in that would allow us to make that a condition?
Yeah, Ian will take that on board. Okay, the meeting's closed.